Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
All right, folks, welcome back to another yet great episode. And I say great before it even starts because I know it's going to be great. This is Climb to Your Prime with Dr. Haim, the one, the only, all the way from the land down under. Dr. Haim himself, Christian Haim. And this is your mental health time, as you know, every month. And although we skipped a couple months, there was some, I guess we'll talk about it in the show today. But you know, I had a loss in the family. And so we couldn't possibly make the last one. But we're here, as always, to bring you more on the mental health stage and really the space of mental health is huge, and there's a lot of stuff. And we do benefit a lot from it, you know, with the expertise of Dr. Haim with us. And of course, we are live on Instagram, on YouTube right now. And of course, this is evergreen on the podcast, the radio, whatever you watch in a streaming right now, you probably can get this, you know, video live or later on, you know, watch it at your own time. We are live, so you can actually interact with us. We'll have some questions that we'll ask live Dr. Haim, and he'll be answering as always. So if you're new to the show, that's just a little debrief on it. But, you know, this is a fifth season in action. So Dr. Haim, welcome, man, back as always. You know, it's always a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, hey, Hurricane, it's just wonderful to be here. It's always great to be part of this show. And look, our condolences go out to you, Hurricane, because life happens to all of us. And sometimes it's joyful, sometimes it hurts, but we always try to make it meaningful. Okay, so thanks for your vision and thanks for what you do.
Well, thank you, doctor. And yes, you know, I mean, I lost a big component of my life, and yeah, it's my mom. I mean, I lost my dad a long time ago, and that was a challenge on its own. And, you know, but it's 18 years later, so I kind of digested that a little bit over time. But, you know, mom was a little bit closer, and, you know, I lived with her for like 53 years of my life. So it's a little hard, you know, when you have someone with you every day for that time frame. And and I'm the only child, so that's the other thing. So it was a little tough for me and the family, and but it was a good end, and the family was there. So thank God. And you know, I had a lot of support, and you know, I want to say that to everybody that's watching and listening. I mean, I want to thank everyone, because I have not expected the response and how people, you know, went and sent condolences and, you know, all their support. You know, I mean, it was great to see, you know, people reaching out, people I didn't even know. And so it was a great thing. So I want to thank everyone for that. And of course, thank you, Doctor, for always being there. And actually, I want to start our questions, you know, if you're not, you know, if you're ready, with a question for me, and it's about grief. And yeah, it's a question that I think, you know, I've gone through it now, and you know, we're always going to go through this through life. If you have people around you, there's always someone that you're going to lose. And I've lost people before that are close by, you know, and not close by, family members. I mean, so it's always hard, right? But it is life. So I'm going to put it on the screen. It's, I think, three stages here. So Dr. Haim, I wanted to ask you about grief from a very real place. When you lose someone or something important, life doesn't stop. You still have to function, work, take care of family, and keep moving. What are some healthy coping mechanisms for grief when you don't have the luxury to fall apart or take a long break? How can someone process their pain without shutting down or pretending they are okay? Hurricane. This is like an official question.
This is an official question, and the person who asked the question is right in front of us, so it's a very real question. So, Hurricane, I can only give you a really real answer. And I suppose the easier thing to do is to tell you a story from somebody that I took care of many years ago that went through something very similar to what you're going through. And it was what we call a grief reaction. And the thing about grief is it's a normal part of life, but it hurts. And in a sense, people would want us to stop the hurt, but they don't want us to take their meaning away. And when does it get to be a problem? And so, Hurricane, your question had to do with, well, what about those times when you can't take a long break, when you can't take a holiday, when you've got to get on with life and you still have to function, but you're feeling the grief? So this person that I took care of many years ago had what we call a complicated grief reaction. So in other words, there were things that went on that made it more than grief, that made it a bit more complex, if you like. And we did a lot of the treatments. We used medications. We used psychotherapy. And then after a few months, this person said to me, I figured out that I don't really want the grief to go. It's just part of me now. I want to be able to function, but can we now move the conversation to how we can move forward with the grief? And that comment was a really real comment, because ultimately the grief comes from love. It wouldn't hurt so much if you didn't love so much, if you didn't have your mother right next to you for over 50 years. This wouldn't hurt much at all. So the grief comes from a place of love to begin with. And so we don't want to stop that. But the question is how to function. And the way to function, I found with this patient that I was working with, is to find meaning in the grief and meaning in going on and asking that very important question, what would your mother, Hurricane, want you to do? And she'd want you to do well, she'd want you to continue, but she'd want you to carry her in your heart as you do that. So whatever that means for you is part of the answer of moving on in your grief, Hurricane.
Well, thank you. And by the way, that's exactly how I'm dealing with it personally. I mean, she's not gone. I mean, she's gone physically, but she's with us mentally, physically, spiritually. I mean, in the heart, in the mind, in our traditions and everything that we have. So I mean, literally, you know, my wife and I, you know, wake up in the morning, I have a picture on the phone, so I'm like, hey, good morning. we actually are having fun with her, and you know, we were having lunch yesterday and we ordered her favorite plate, you know, her favorite food and stuff like that. So again, to your point, it's carried on, you know, with us. And yeah, it's a way. This is just how we deal about it, like, you know, with the family. But again, I mean, like you said, there's many ways. You don't forget about the people, because it's, yeah. And frankly, I mean, from, I can go to it from maybe a religious aspect of things. I mean, it is part of life. And if you believe in the hereafter, you know that we're all going to eventually meet on the other side. So it's funny because I look at it as this, it's like when someone goes on vacation, right? You don't see them for a minute, or they go to a different country, whatever, a couple of months. So she's just on a vacation in a different, you know, dimension, or we can call that a different country. I mean, it's just a different world, basically. And you know, sometimes you don't. I mean, back in the days, you didn't have a phone or a Zoom or any of these things. People left for months before you saw them again. So you say goodbyes and or farewell, and you just expect to see them again. So that's kind of like. So I mean, it's almost like logisticating in the concept and kind of working it in the brains, you know, to justify it, to make it easier. But it's just the way I break it down personally. So.
Okay, that's actually a very good way of breaking it down, Hurricane. And I'm just going to speak into that a little bit more. We'll get into the brain in a second, because the brain does do things that are important for grief. But I'm going to talk about little grief, because you mentioned people being away for vacations. And we live in a world where children will go away to study somewhere else, to live somewhere else, to work somewhere else. And at the moment, my love partner, as you know, Caroline, is away from me for a couple of weeks. And so that just means that there's a little grief. It's not a permanent thing, but there's a little bit of grief there. And there's that feeling of missing. So if you take that feeling that I feel every day at the moment, and you magnify it to what people like you are feeling at the moment, Hurricane, that it's a bigger and a more permanent type of longing and despair, then people who haven't had that kind of loss will get some sort of an idea of what grief can actually be like. But again, the grief comes from loving somebody. If you didn't love this person, it wouldn't be a problem. You wouldn't have the grief. So there are all these smaller griefs that go on. And the other thing is, it's actually lucky to be able to grieve, because the grief comes from somebody who cares about you. The difficulty is when you don't have anybody to grieve. There's nobody that you miss if they go overseas. And hearing your story, Hurricane, fills us a little bit with warmth and envy, because you had somebody so close to you. So it's when we don't have those people that are close to us that life gets even more difficult. All right, but I'll go inside the brain, because how did this whole thing happen? So sometimes when people are apart for a couple of weeks, they talk about a golden thread or something that still keeps them together, because they know that they belong together even though they're apart. So how does that work in the brain? And Hurricane, we're going to one of my beloved parts of the brain, the anterior cingulate gyrus, which is probably the seat of our empathy, where our brains are connected, we care about each other, we affect each other, and as we watch each other, we actually mirror what's going on in each other's life in ourselves. So at the moment, you're going through some grief. So guess what? My brain brings up those feelings of grief in me, so that I share in your experience, because we are social creatures, we share life. And here, in a sense, is the kicker. The kicker is that the anterior cingulate gyrus is very closely associated with the amygdala. Now, I know I'm using neurological terms, but they're important, because the amygdala, if you like, is our seat of pain. And it actually means that to keep ourselves connected in empathy, which happens in our anterior cingulate gyrus, pain is not too far away. In fact, one of the things that keeps us united as human beings is knowing that it hurts physically, emotionally, mentally, and even spiritually, and that somehow we share in that experience and we can carry each other through the experience, which is why at the moment you're very grateful for all those well wishes of support that people have given you. It's their anterior cingulate gyrus chiming in with your anterior cingulate gyrus to carry the grief together.
So doctor, is that a same thing as empathy, or that's
exactly empathy. Yes. So anterior cingulate gyrus is empathy, and we get excited about empathy, because empathy sounds very positive, but the basis of empathy is actually pain. And what I mean by that is, if you're driving along a highway and you go past an accident and the ambulance is there, you will find yourself having a grief reaction for people that you don't know. You go quiet because the pain of a car accident and having to face our mortality is something that unites us as human beings. And so in times of grief, when we come together with our religious rituals or our personal rituals, it's a time of coming together to remind each other, hey, we're trying to get through this thing called life and its pain together.
Well, thank you, Doc. Well, one thing I want to say, Dr. Caroline is with us on the show, so she's watching right now. so she's not that far. She's with us right now.
That's fantastic.
But you know, so I want to just add a couple things, because I think this is an important piece, because throughout life, you know, I mean, and especially if you're in the corporate world, I mean, we work with other people, and sometimes you have people that report to you in a department, whatever.
Yeah,
and you know, people sometimes they call in and they say we have a loss in the family. I just want to send a message to the people that are in charge of any type of, you know, employee. You know, you want to be, I guess, sensitive to these folks, because when they're going through this stuff, and maybe like someone say, well, now that you're at this stage, you say this. I mean, I've always been accommodated, but you know, but sometimes I've seen it where people refuse to give them time. They don't understand what they're going through, and they still demand. I mean, it, everybody's coping different. So again, I think we all are, to your point, doctor, we have to be in touch with our own mortality and understand that this is not the other guys, because one day it's our turn and we will be dealing with stuff and how we would like to feel if someone doesn't really, you know, accommodate us in a way, right? So it kind of becomes, so again, I just wanted to highlight that, because a lot of people may go through this. And another point that I wanted to add is that some people have a larger family. Some people have no one. For example, in my case, I don't have brothers and sisters, but I do have brothers that have, you know, adopted me in their life, you know, and those are my best friends, and, you know, and their families, right? And I have friends and that are close enough. And, you know, one thing, when you have a lot of folks, you know, you're going to lose people around you, and it's a matter of just like how to be there for them. And I have to say, these people have been literally with me throughout stuff, and some of them were literally with me from before the loss to the aftermath. And so that's an important. So again, just a quick message to the audience out there, do the right thing, you know, and don't dismiss this. It's a big moment in life and an event that is actually abrupt and sometimes can be devastating for some people. Not everybody copes with it the same way. So again, I just wanted to send that as a message to our audiences out there. And maybe if you're in position, you know, do share this message away, you know, and use it to your advantage and to be good for others. That's it.
Yeah. So I just want to speak to that, Hurricane, because you're giving some really important messages. And so there are two messages that I want to pick up on. First of all, the message that you gave out to employers to be a little bit sensitive. So in a sense, you're saying, look, just switch on your anterior cingulate gyrus and have some empathy, because this is what's interesting in our world. We're called upon to do stuff, to produce stuff, to do what we can to make the world a better place. But sometimes in organizing that, the bottom line becomes profits rather than people. And so here at Dr. Christian Heim, we talk about a balance to make sure that we have people before productivity. And I got to say, Hurricane, our society is getting better at this. We now have paternal leave, we have grievance leave, we have carer's leave, we have all of these different leaves, because recognizing in society that we have personal lives as well that impact on us. And all right, we're not here to take advantage of that, but we are here to share in the human experience as well as the work experience. And the other thing that you brought up, Hurricane, was you're an only child. And yeah, there are advantages to being an only child, and there are disadvantages as well. And you don't have brothers and sisters to support you at this time. But I've got to let you know that brothers and sisters can make things complicated. And sometimes I wouldn't be talking about an experience here, Hurricane, but it complicates the grief time. And it means that it's the people around you that you share life with and you share values with that become your brothers and sisters. So in a sense, because we both value getting good messages out there to improve the world, we're brothers in this, Hurricane. We're brothers.
Well, thank you. And you know, it's funny, I was laughing because my wife and I, when we're going through the hospital and, you know, those 3 days before, you know, my mom left us, and you know, it was decisions time, right, with the doctors, with stuff, and, you know, and we had this discussion, like, it's a good thing you don't have any brothers and sisters, because you will be just fighting about, like, what are we going to do, who's going to do what, and where, you know. So to your point, there is some benefits to it. Yeah. I mean, it's one angle to look at it, and the other one is maybe you don't have the emotional, you know, piece to it, but I guess, you know, when you surround yourself with good people that will be there for you no matter what, in good times, bad times. And I think that's another message for people. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're by yourself in life, make sure you have the right people.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. But even, let's say, brothers and sisters that you're at loggerheads with, and there's a lot of conflict because people are going on with, this is what we should do, no, this is what we should do. Even those arguments and even that conflict is born of love. Because what people are saying is, this is my mother and I loved her and this is what I want to see happen. And somebody else is saying, yeah, but this is my mother and we were really close and this is what I want to see happen. And every sibling actually says that, but it obviously doesn't get expressed in the arguments. But the intensity and the passion behind the arguments and even the conflict and pain, that's all part of love relationships, as complex as it gets.
Well, thank you. So one more message, you know, folks, you know, when you get close to this point, you know, and you see someone depart, I mean, you start thinking, as you said, Doctor, about mortality and our, you know, vulnerability and weakness as humankind and the species, right? And that we're all going to have to face that day, that moment, you know, one day, right? And so sometimes don't get too greedy in life. And that gets a lesson I learned, you know, seeing my mom, because she really didn't care about the world, you know, in her last days. And I think sometimes we take it too far in this worldly stuff. And, you know, yes, there's nothing wrong about wanting some of this world's, you know, great things that are available to us. But, you know, don't make it into your heart. I mean, I, as I always say, you know, have it in your hand, not in your heart, meaning you can use it, do whatever, it's a means, but don't make it like the ultimate target and goal in life. Again, I just quick another message. I mean, I'm a little mushy on this story today. I don't know.
No, that's Hurricane. That's totally understandable. That's because you're a passionate, loving guy. And yeah, so the things that you were just talking about then actually has to do with values, because one of the ways to work through grief is to look at what has this grief experience taught me. And when you lose somebody who's close to you, you sort of go, oh my gosh, I actually cared for this person a whole lot more. And this experience was more important to me than some of the things that I thought was important. So in other words, a grief experience and losing somebody close gives you perspective. And so it's a good chance that even if you can't go on a long holiday, Hurricane, to sit by a river or at the beach or in a forest and just pen and paper, say, what's important to me in my life? What do I want to be able to say has happened when I get to that point when I'm getting close to the end and I'm looking back and I'm saying I made the right decisions? It's knowing your values and even writing down your values. I know I'm giving homework here, but it's important. That will get you through this grief time and will help you function in your way forward.
Well, I'm going to have to do that. You know, and again, everybody's watching. If you're going through a similar life, you know, moment, you know, maybe that's an exercise to utilize as well. But I do want to just say, you know, I mean, I know we've spent enough on this question, but I think it's important because that, you know, is part of life and everybody's going to experience one way or the other, you know, and they're, as long as they have, you know, some level of connection with humans, right? But right. Again, I just want to say this, if you have loved ones, I mean, cherish them and take care of them and, Don't undermine the times that you have with them, because the time will come and you'll be like, what the hell happened? Can't make it back. You can't take it back. There's nothing you can do. So, you know, take care of people that you love while they're still here, you know, like, you know, and you know, don't just visit them when they're gone. Like, oh, if you were here, you know, visit them while they're still here, not in the grave. And that's just another message that I wanted to put in there.
Great message, Hurricane.
All right. Well, all right. So are we ready for the next one?
Yeah, we're ready.
Here we go. So this is a direct one. Dr. Ham, is manifestation a mind game or a real psychological phenomenon? Dean, New Jersey. Manifestation. Oh, that's big.
Okay, manifestation. Big thing these days. Uh-huh. Okay, excuse me. All right, so Dean, is it real? Is it a psychological phenomenon? It's not a yes or no answer, all right? It's a lot more complicated than that. So it depends on how you define manifestation, and it depends on how you define a psychological phenomenon. So here we go. All right. If I wanted to visualize a whale in front of me, that doesn't mean that one's going to turn up in the next couple of days, right? That doesn't mean manifestation is not a real phenomenon, but I will talk about how it's actually real. And it has to do with your reticular activating system. Your reticular activating system is a part of your brainstem that keeps you focused on things that are important to you. Now, if I thought about a whale for the next couple of days, or every morning thought about a whale, my reticular activating system would keep me alert to anything that has to do with whales. So if there was a story about a whale, I'd go, oh, look at that. Whereas before I wouldn't have noticed that. Or if there was a picture or a symbol of a whale somewhere when I'm walking down the street, my reticular activating system would cause my head to turn and say, see, there it is. That's what you're looking for. And that's real. So I'll give you a concrete example that a lot of people have experienced. Let's say you buy a new car and it's an SUV that you didn't know of before you did your research on the SUV you wanted, and you bought this particular car. Then all of a sudden you have this crazy experience that you're driving down the street and you see all of these cars. You see the exact car that you bought and you go, oh my gosh, how come I didn't see all of these cars beforehand? And the thing is that you did see them with your eyes, but your reticular activating system wasn't looking out for them, so it didn't notice them. But as soon as you put something on your radar, your reticular activating system actually looks for it and directs you to it if you want to or not. And that's how, from a psychological point of view, people can see that thinking about something will actually manifest it in your life. But you've still got to earn the money to buy the car in the first place.
Well, thank you. But it is a real example. I mean, this thing about car, I've experienced it. Like, you never see a certain car until you drive it, and then like, what the hell? There's everybody's driving the same car. It becomes right. Like almost. But I think what I'm getting is that the idea that everything is already there. It's out there. Whatever it is that we might be seeking is out there. But once you start thinking about it and putting your mind towards it, you know, and that's why, as you said earlier, this is a good topic that these days we hear about, because business world, in getting richer and whatever, like, you know, getting wealthier, it doesn't happen without putting the work. But if you start thinking about it, you'll start seeing the signs, you start seeing things and how you can maneuver through it so it becomes a reality. And so all of a sudden you start seeing the circles, the networking opportunities, the whatever it is that you're doing, whatever circles you're in, you start seeing that stuff. And without doing that, basically, as you said, Doc, it's not even in your radar. You're not even noticing that. Yeah. So it's really, the world is around us, you know, giving us signs on a regular basis. It's just whether we want in or we don't want to be part of it. And the moment you want something, you start like really working towards it, it just manifests. Well, it actually, I guess, happens by your actions.
Okay, so you've broadened it out, which is great. We'll get there.
Okay.
But before we leave the brain and a psychological point of view, I've got to tell you about your second attention center in your brain. Okay, so we talked about the reticular activating system, which is an automatic one. All right, this will alert us to what we want. If it's food or avoiding danger, it'll keep us there. But we humans have a second one, which is in the front of our brain, and this is our frontal lobe attention. We can choose to focus on what we want to choose on, what we want to focus on. So let's say we want to maximize our profits on the share market, and we're going through max, right? You know, and this word max will be something that you will notice when it's got to do with articles online about maximizing your profits. Whereas somebody who doesn't want to maximize their profit will see the word max and think, oh yeah, there was a movie called Mad Max a few years ago, and I kind of like that. I'll go see that again, all right? So it's where you focus your energies that you can actually achieve something. Now, I'm going to leave the brain and I'm going to go to quantum science, because what you said, Hurricane, is true, that we now know that the whole world is made up of quantum energy rather than finite matter, and that all the world contains potentials that we can actually bring into being, all right? And this is where the idea of manifesting comes through, and that perhaps once we make a decision, like let's say we decide to look through a microscope, an electron microscope, at electrons going through a double slit, once we make that decision to do that, we actually make a decision which collapses reality into one possibility that's gone forward. Now, before everybody gets too excited about this being manifestation, science, particularly online, gets mixed with a lot of New Age philosophy and ideas and self-help ideas for which there is not scientific evidence that we can manifest what we want. So at the very broadest side of everything, yes, the world is full of potentials. But as a psychiatrist, I want to alert you to what you can do in your brain. You can actually focus on what you want and then work towards getting what you want. And then your frontal lobe will keep you focused so that you can bring a vision into reality through work and through doing things in the real world. And you have this system called the reticular activating system that will work for you to notice things that are on your mind, so that things that seem to be synchronicity or coincidences actually aren't. It's actually just your brain keeping you focused to notice the things that are interesting to you. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, definitely. And by the way, I think that's the core of how it's supposed to be, right? I mean, you set a vision, like even in the business world, right? That's what we say. You set a goal, you go after it, and you know, and just kind of zone in and, you know, just kind of zoom in into whatever, you know, and then build up the steps to it. And that's about it. I mean, you got to do the work. Nothing happens. I mean, let's say this show, right? It's an idea. It's a vision. It's something that we see and would like to actually achieve. But this is 6 years in the making now. And, you know, it's the work. It's not going to happen. I mean, if we don't show up, nothing's going to happen, right?
Okay, and Hurricane, this is really important. This is really important for Dean, who asked the question. Because when it comes to a word like manifestation, people think that you can sit in a chair, just think about something, just affirm something, and it will magically appear in front of you. Whereas you use this show as an example, and you're just right, Hurricane, it's taken 6 years of work to get where we are now. And we both had a vision in our brain 6 years ago, but 5% inspiration, 95% perspiration. We went through the 5% inspiration, and since then it's been a lot of hard work getting the technology together, getting the time together, getting your vision in line with what we want to do and where you're taking it. And that's been a whole lot of hard work that has brought your vision into manifestation.
I love that. Perspiration, vision to manifestation. But, you know, there are, I mean, to your point, there's a lot of stuff in social media today where we see, you know, the concept, for example, of manifestation boards where you have to put stuff and you know, but really all it does is kind of reinforces your visual so you can be focused on those things that, again, it's really setting up the goal or having the plan. It's the master plan. But if you don't see it, you're basically distracted. You can't be distracted. But if you constantly see things, it becomes part of your day-to-day life, and therefore you just have a better chance of achieving it.
Yes. And if you don't have a target, then it doesn't matter where you point the bow and arrow, all right, you're going to miss. But as soon as you get a target, and that's what a vision is, I want to do this, I'd like to start a business in this, I want to work as this, then you've got a target. Now you can start making decisions based on that target and moving towards the target, which is why our psychological tool, firstly, is to know your values. And then you use your GPS for guidance. GPS means goals, plan, and steps that you have to take. So from your values, you get your goal. This is the kind of job that I want. Then you've got a plan. I need this sort of education. I need to come across like this. And then the step that you need to take next. I have to make this phone call, because sitting in a room, thinking about it while you're in a chair is not going to get you the job.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite quotes that I used, you know, a long time ago in one of my first shows. Is like, some people dream of success, some other wake up and work at it, right? So so we got to get up and read it. But you're right, it starts with the vision. I mean, you know, it's not a secret. When I started, and I had a couple of questions about my own, you know, path. It started with a vision. I wanted to work at Disney World. And this is back, you know, when I was a kid in Morocco and literally in middle school. And I didn't just like, okay, I happened to be there. I mean, I did have to learn English. I did have to go get a degree. I did have to actually apply and go to an interview and do the process and then go there. But I didn't deviate from the goal. I mean, that was my objective, and that's it. But the bottom line is, I think for our audiences and, you know, to Dean, is that manifestation is kind of real, but it has requirements. It has rules.
Okay. So, the word manifestation for me is problematic because it gives the messages that you can get things easy just by thinking about it, right? And there's something that goes on because of the internet. We're able to see people who are wildly successful, and then we start comparing ourselves with these wildly successful people, and we think, okay, I want what they have. And so we set ourselves goals that are unrealistic. Whereas because of that, people can actually manipulate that in us. And so a lot of clickbait is based on manifestation because we all want more than we actually have. And this is an opportunity for other people to manipulate us, all right? But if we look at the lives of people who have made it big and have written books about it, and that's a good way to learn how they actually manifested their dream, you will read that their life was full of a lot of hard work, right? And it's the hard work part that we don't always like, but it's that part that's just as important as having a vision to begin with.
There's no free ride, doctor, right?
No free lunch.
This is not going to happen like you wave and it's going to just happen. There's no Jedi business, right? It's That's real. Right. You got to do the work. And thank you, doctor, for clarifying that, because I think this question is very deep, because a lot of people today, there's a lot. I mean, I see a lot of stuff. I mean, I love those manifestation quotes and stuff. It just keeps you like in the groove of things. Like it keeps you going, right? So it's like constantly I'm seeing the same thing, the same message repeating itself, which means it keeps me alert to it, right? As opposed to like completely forget about it. Because I mean, out of sight of the mind, as we say, right? If you don't see something, you know, every day, you just, and same thing with anything else. If you want to be good at anything, it's repetition. So the more you see something that is aligned with your, you know, targets in life, whatever those may be, it's going to help you just, you know, get back into lane. The minute you distract, it's like being on a wheels, you know, driving, and then next thing you know, you start like, you know, veering out right or left, you know, outside to the shoulder, and then oops, you got to get back into the path, right? So these things kind of, you know, it's like you have a sign, be careful, wake up, whatever. So I mean, yeah. I'm just giving some descriptive for my own small way of doing things.
it's not a little way of doing things, it's the right way of doing things. But as a psychiatrist, I have to give the cautionary tales of people who have taken, let's say, the carrot of how easy it might be to get places. And then they find out that they lose people who are close to them, or something happens and they go, why did I spend all my time doing something that I don't really value? Which is why we need perspective. It really grieves me to see people getting manipulated by messages out there that life is easy, because it isn't. If you use it for motivation like you do, Hurricane, that's fantastic, because you've got to have that vision and you've got to keep the motivation and you've got to keep the drive up. But that's not all of life. It's a motivating factor, and you may be able to turn your vision into a reality, but you know what? It may take a whole lot longer and it may not actually happen. That's part of life too. And so that all has to be put into our values, which we can then go goal, plan, and the step we've got to take next.
Love that GPS. You got me there when you said GPS. I'm like, okay. But now we know, folks, there's another GPS that we have to use.
That's so right. It's still a guidance system. It's still a guidance
system. It is a guidance system, but this is the real thing. I mean, one is just for position on the earth, but this is more about our compass ourselves. But really, doctor, thank you, because it's an important message, because you're right. There is no quick success. Even the best successful people will tell you it took time. There's no overnight success. I mean, maybe like there's, you gamble, you win $1 million, whatever. That's one in a billion chance. But the average person takes a lot of work to get, you know, whatever they need. And you're right. Not all the time you're going to make it. And by the way, that doesn't discourage you. A lot of, you know, failures are just part of, you know, the success or the next success of your life.
Yes.
So that's important. But again, yes, just don't get lazy and expect things to happen. And I think there is a level of entitlement. Even today's world is creating some of that. And people are like, I just want to have everything that everybody has. Actually, my kids told me one day, like, I'm like, really? Like, I just want to, you know, not do anything and have everything. It's like, well, good luck. It ain't gonna happen.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So there are two good things that you really brought up there. I mean, it's all good, Hurricane, but the things that I want to speak to is, firstly, failure is not failure. Success is success. Failure is success. Not getting out there and trying, that's about the only failure there is. So however you keep yourself motivated to do things and fail and to get past the failure, that's going to be a success, because every failure you will learn from and it'll bring you closer to success. The other thing that I just want to add is, a lot of people are enamored about this idea that we live in a quantum universe where anything is possible. And that's only possible on the microscopic part of the universe and to some degree in the macroscopic. But you see, if I take a tennis ball and drop it, I can predict 100 times out of 100 what's going to happen to that tennis ball. It's totally predictable. It's not random. And the quantum effect does not take place where we are at the moment. And it's because we know what's going to happen that we have a chance to control the variables and to start moving in directions that we actually want. But it takes our intervention.
Ooh, well, listen, folks, again, you know, no free lunch, no free ride. We got to focus. And again, I mean, listen, let's work toward, by the way, motivation is a nice spark, but really, I think discipline is really where we have to be. And that's actually something that comes up over and over is like motivation versus discipline. Discipline is what makes things happen. Motivation just gets you just the tickle, you know, like the excitement, but that's about it.
Yes, and what both of us are doing here, you as a business person looking for motivation, and for me as a psychiatrist, is giving people the perspective that there are things that they can do and it's worthwhile. So I've got to tell you a little story, because I was working with somebody who was in their early 20s and they were trying to kick a drug habit, all right? They were into substances and it was ruining their lives. And we were starting to put in a plan as to what this person could do. And then she burst into tears. And I went, what happened? She says, doesn't matter what I do, there's going to be a part of me in a multi-universe somewhere that's always going to be addicted. And I can't do anything about that. And she was going to give up her quest of being amphetamine free because of a theory that we live in a multiverse where there's multiple ourselves that are doing different things all at the same time. And I went into bat to sort of say, this is just a theory. And besides, you are here right now. And I am here right now. And right now, we are putting in a really good plan for your life. And as far as we may know, this may be the only life you actually have. So through that, we got back onto track.
Well, listen, I mean, there is a multiverse theory. And you know, I mean, you can, when you talk about quantum, it's all possible. I mean, everything's happening at the same time and, you know, all is energy and there's a lot more stuff. But to your point, a situation like this, it's happening today, it's now. And even if there is another you, well, that you may be them and you are here. And I think you need to be taken care of right now. And this is fine. At least one of you is doing better. I mean, yeah, I can see that.
That's true. But because of a theory, a lot of people are changing the way that they live. And they think that they're in a random universe, okay? Which is why I brought up the tennis ball. Because quantum theory tells us that this is a random universe. But you try getting the ball to do something random, all right? It's just really difficult to get a tennis ball to do something random. It just won't. It won't move by itself. Wherever you put the force, it will go. And Newtonian physics will win over quantum physics every time in our actual world. It's not random. You are in this world. You get a chance to shape it.
And we've covered this in a couple of shows before. So you know, anyone watching, please do catch some of the old, you know, shows. There are some discussions about this because we are in charge. We have the choices. We make choices, I think, in life. And, you know, that's a debate where people say, well, I'm doomed. You know, I have no money. I was raised this way or the other way. Nobody's doomed. I mean, yes, we have a set of cards, I guess, that we're dealt, as we say, but really it's how we play and how we do things. And the more you make moves, the more things can open. And it's, I think it's part of the plan, I guess, if there is a plan or if you believe in a plan or your plan. I mean, at the end of the day, there's more that. But to your point, doctor, is us. We have to do the necessary steps and you can't skip those. You know, it's like that iceberg, you know, picture that everybody sees. And I'm sure you've seen it if you're watching this. Well, you have the tip, which is success, and you have all the stuff that is under the iceberg, which is the bigger part, with all the heart shape and the hard times and the sweat and the anxieties and depression that goes along before you actually show some. And to your point, doctor, I think there's a lot of emphasis on success in a way that is financial and worldly, you know, stuff. And therefore people are like, you know, they're excited about that. And so they forget that there are rules to get whatever it is. There's no, I mean, maybe you can get some shortcut, meaning that you can find ways to get closer and maybe skip steps. But one thing you mentioned, Doctor, that I wanted just to allude to quickly is the idea of regret. Because that's the other thing. You can completely focus on something, and then before you know it, you're going to realize, as I said, you know, we started this thing with grief. You know, you will regret things that you haven't done or the moments you have missed, you know, with a loved one, for example. And there's no time, there's no coming back. So do what's best for you. So again, that's just something else that you mentioned then. I just wanted to play in there.
Yeah, Hurricane. And it's very interesting because the idea of regret actually ties in our grief reactions with this idea of this being a random universe. You see, because if we actually lived in a random universe, we wouldn't regret anything. But most of us have regrets because of decisions we made. And we make decisions because we can actually shape our lives. And so when you look at a grief reaction, when you say, I wish I had spent a bit more time with that person, I wish I had told them this, or I wish years ago that I didn't do this, whatever your regrets happen to be, it's because you knew that you were actually in control of whatever you said or whatever you did. It wasn't just a random occurrence. And so the thing about regret is it can actually drive us to go, right, I'm going to actually take hold of some of my decisions. I'm going to take responsibility for the way that I live life, and I'm going to start living just a little bit more by what I actually value. And the people around us, the people that we love, are things that, generally speaking, we all value. And this is where regrets come, when we transgress our own values and our own sense of what needs to be done in life.
Well, thank you, Doctor. And frankly, you know, there's something that I always use for me, but I see it more, and that is the concept of time, right? And time is the only commodity that we are running out of, and we can't get more of it.
And before we run out of time, I'm on very low battery, so please keep going, Hurricane, while I plug in.
Okay, you got it. No worries. So this is the thing that I'm talking about, is the concept of, you know, where I guess the average span of life is 70 to 80, depends male or female these days, right? And so in between that, we have a challenge of if you're in the 30s or 40s, you're already like past that midpoint, right? And so that's a challenge right there. So if you start thinking about what you're going to be doing in the next 40 years of your life, and probably the health is not going to be as good as, you know, when you're in the 20s and the 30s, that's going to change things for us. So again, the concept is the idea of being really aware of where we are in our time span, and to your point, not to regret things, do things, and don't wait till the last minute, because, you know, your health is not always going to be there. I mean, this is the iHealth channel and iHealth Radio. Health is something that eludes people, you know, before you know it. And again, when you see someone deteriorating over time, you start valuing, like, you know, wow. I mean, you know, how it's funny, because before, like, we were on a cruise before, you know, a couple of weeks before my mom passed. And we were in this elevator, and my mom was in a wheelchair, and there comes a baby in actual stroller. And literally, I looked at both of them side by side, and I'm like, that's the beginning, this is the end. And it was my reaction that actually said to my wife, like, wow. It's like, you don't see these things in normal lives, but maybe I'm just dumb, you know, I'm crazy in my mind. I started like looking at these things in my own way. But it was really, it's a moment that it was like in my face. I'm seeing it. What are the coincidences? Yeah. Why both of them being there, and they're both being pulled into the elevator. One is just in the birth, you know, and the really the peak of, you know, they're going to grow up and hopefully become, you know, successful and so on and so forth. And the parents are so happy about, you know, having the kids. And here I come with mom, you know, in a wheelchair, and I see that, you know, that's the beginning of life. And this is more or less the end of it. Now, of course, I mean, at the time I didn't, you know, you still have hope that, you know, we have more time, but just the concept, when you start seeing that, you start looking at life a lot differently from where you're, you know, because we get distracted a lot. But when you start putting these things in perspective, it sends a strong message to you. And so you become different, you start thinking differently. And again, that's a message for people. Don't take life for granted. And, you know, take advantage of every moment because you're losing time, whether you like it or not. So people, we have celebrations of birth date, right? And sometimes I tell my kids, you're celebrating birthday, that's great, but that's a year that's gone. You know, we don't guarantee the future. So maybe there is, do we celebrate it? Do we actually, like, you know, be sad about it? Like, you know, I'm losing time here. So it's a concept. I mean, by the way, that's doctor. I mean, what do you think of that? I mean, is it, am I being harsh about it?
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, the image that you're giving us, I'm going to freeze frame it. I'm going to pretend that we're in the Matrix and I'm going to freeze frame that moment of life when you're giving us the picture of an elevator in front of you and you see an old person and a baby at the same time, right? Because we've got to tie in the randomness and the goals that we all have. So let's say that you just came to that elevator and you see that frame, and that's a random moment that has come to you. But what it's done is it brought you back to the time span of life. That there is a beginning of life, that there is a span of growth, and then there is an end time of life. And as much as we know that we live in a quantum universe where basically time and space don't matter, I've never been able to go back to the time when I was 14 years old. I've never been able to go back to my 20s. I don't know anybody who's ever time traveled. You saw that life progresses in one direction only, from the baby through what you call the middle point, okay, when we develop, and then into old age, and there will come a time for all of us when it's over. And we have to balance the randomness and the predictability of how we know, as you said, we each get about 70 or 80 years, the predictability that it's finite, and we've got to make what we can out of that. The randomness, if you like, is the choices that you're able to make. You can actually decide whether you're going to work here, work there, teach, learn, be in economics, do this product or whatever, or not be part of that at all. Those decisions are totally up to you. But when it comes to actually living out your decisions and your values, then you're part of this non-random, predictable march of life going from baby to teenager, to adult, to old age. And that is time limited. And how you choose and what you choose to do during that time is up to you.
Well, thank you. But so I was asking the question about the birthday concept, because I tell my kids, and maybe it's my belief, like, you know, there was a point where I stopped really celebrating because, well, I mean, yes, celebrate life is one. And a lot of people tell you that's a good thing. But at the same time, it's almost like, you know, I got to celebrate, you know, what I have left. I need to work towards that. And maybe it's not an exciting moment where you know that you're getting closer to the grave than is that. I mean, is that, is there something of value there? Or is it like...
Very much so. And I should have tied that in, Hurricane, because you're at a different stage of life to your children, right? Like our fifth birthday is really exciting. Our 18th birthday is really exciting. Our 21st birthday is really exciting. From 30 onwards, you sort of go, this is getting less exciting. Okay. And by the time you're sort of 57, you go, okay, what is a birthday really? And a birthday is a reminder that you're part of the predictable lifespan that we all have. But it also becomes a reminder that this lifespan is time limited, and I need to take responsibility to live to the fullest each and every year, but also each and every day, to live out what I value, not only for myself, but for the people around me as well. And so when you're discovering life, in other words, when you're young, a birthday is exciting because everything that you learn about life is so exciting. But when you've lived a while, you sort of go, you know, these things are less exciting. So I've got to look for meaning in how I'm living and why I'm actually living.
So, but is it a strong point to bring to someone at that youth age? Because, that might be perceived like you're too extreme, like, you know, in your views, you know. But to your point, I mean, when I was younger, I didn't care about time. I mean, really, like, there's a point in life you don't even think about age. You just live. But then there's a point. I think it was the 40s when you start, like, really start kind of you know, revisiting some of the things you do. And when you hit the 50s, I don't know, but that's like, that was my point where, like, you know, I'm starting to be like more aware of everything. And it's just amazing. But again, I don't want to doom Dave, you know, on the youth, but you know, it's just being aware, folks. That's all.
No, but it is being aware. But you see, if somebody is, let's say, 18, they're going to think like an 18-year-old. Okay. And if you're 52, you're going to think like a 52-year-old. So I had another female patient. She was 18, and we were talking about values, and I asked her to go home and ask her mother what's the most valuable thing in life. All right, so this is an 18-year-old going home to a mother who was 48 and asking what's valuable in life. And she did this over dinner, and the mum said, what's valuable in life? This, what we're doing right now. You, your dad, your brother, your sister, and me, and you sitting down to dinner. This makes life really meaningful for me. And the 18-year-old daughter just looked up at her and said, Mum, you're insane. This is the boring stuff there is, okay? I want to get out there and do some stuff, okay? Because it's different. An 18-year-old needs to experience things in life. By the time you're 48, you find out that it's actually the people close to you that make life worthwhile.
Listen, I can concur to that. You know, it's as real as it gets. I mean, you're right. And you know, I mean, I get it. Like, you know, with my kids, they want to do their own thing. I mean, they're young and they're different stages. That's the other thing. Like, you know, but they should enjoy the life. I mean, there's nothing wrong. I mean, yeah. I think everybody should maximize the opportunity. But again, maximize the opportunities, no regrets, do the best thing, be close to people, and just be aware. I mean, don't waste your day and your time, you know, in nonsense. And that's the only thing, or don't hurt yourself. And some people think also, like, you're talking about drugs and stuff, that's a cool thing. And then they just destroy themselves, and before they know it, they will regret eventually, because their life can become a nightmare, you know. So
and that's where the regrets come, when you end up chasing something that doesn't give you what you wanted. For example, a lot of the people who take methamphetamine, they wanted pleasure, but they ended up getting pain. Or they're taking the methamphetamine to stop themselves thinking about something that was very painful in the past. Either way, it'll end up to a regret. So in psychiatry, what we do is we look to a more valuable coping mechanism or a more valuable pursuit. Because aiming for pleasure, particularly as you get older, is not going to be high enough. You're going to have to aim for long-term contentment. Then you're going to have to aim for meaning, love, learning, and the journey of life itself.
Whew. You know, Doc, I mean, the hour is almost over and we only covered two questions. I mean, you know, we're going to have to catch up to the other ones, and there's some of them. I mean, the next one was about great, you know, I guess gratitude. I mean, we are in the month of Thanksgiving here, you know, for us in the U.S. And so I was going to, you know, there's a question about it, but I don't think we have time to cover it. It's a long one. It's probably going to take a few minutes. I know your time is limited. Maybe we can table it to the next time, or if you
want to. Let's table that, but let's use that to sort of tie a few things together and do a bit of time traveling to the 15th century when we go to those pilgrims who put together Thanksgiving, right? This is when we can do time traveling in our minds. In our minds, we're capable of going absolutely anywhere. And when we sit down to a turkey and just say, thank you for life, we are sharing something that the pilgrims in the 15th century shared, because they sat down and they said, thank you for life. So even though we're all very different and we have to make our own decisions, there's something that unites us all in what life has to offer. And that's where the empathy comes in, because we can actually have empathy with pilgrims in the 15th century, because they're human beings just like we are. And in that, we have our shared humanity. I hope that's not too esoteric for people out there. There's a bit of reality in that. And I just want to add to people's gratitude as we make decisions to get through this strange thing called life.
Well, thank you, Doc. And we will ask that question because obviously, you know, we don't undermine any question that comes in. You know, we want to put it out there. So next time we'll catch it because I think gratitude goes beyond Thanksgiving. So we can talk more about it. But thank you. But the power of thank you and being grateful is just amazing. I think we all should take that pill because I think it helps us, you know, be better humans. And to your point, it touches on empathy and all the stuff that we talked about today. All right. Well, we're about the end of the hour.
Just yes, on that. Yeah. Thank you, Hurricane.
Oh, you beat me to it. All right. Well, listen, thank you. I mean, listen, and we thank you folks for being with us, watching and listening today and anytime, you know, because this show is forever. And so whenever you hit this one, you know, just that we are grateful for you and for just being who you are and being able to even listen to us and give us a moment of your, I mean, because again, listening to this will take some of your time, but I hope it's worth every, you know, second of it. So thank you. Doctor, I think we're just at the top of the hour here. And so I want to thank you for being again on the show, as always, giving your insights and sharing with us, you know, a lot of great, you know, components to use in life, because I think we all need tools. And these are like, there's physical tools, but I think the mental tools are important because it keeps us going. We need them, you know, it's just a part of life. So that's it, Doctor. Thank you so much. And folks, go ahead, Doc.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to say, and as a brother across time and space, all the best for what you're going through, Hurricane.
Thank you. Thank you. And I need it and I can take it. I'm going to grab it. Thank you. All right, folks, that's it. You know, I mean, hopefully this particular show was not too extreme in the emotion part of it, but you know what? We're humans and, you know, emotion is a part of who we are and, you know, we need to cope with them. And Doctor actually did give us a lot of good stuff today for me personally, but I think, you know, I took this opportunity to share it for everyone else. You know, if you're going through it or if you ever go through this, you will be able to at least maybe deal with it, you know, in a better way and better light. And that's it for today. You know, we'll be talking soon, new day. And a different show on, I think the last one will be the last Friday of the year, whatever that Friday is. I mean, literally it's the year, it's December. So it will be the one before the new year. Hopefully we'll be live again with you guys. And, you know, let's just stay tuned for that one. That's it. We'll be talking soon. Bye for now.